I can feel the dawn, I can feel the earth, I can feel the living all around, round, 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 all around, round, round, round. I can choose a path, I can choose the word, I can start the healing, bring it now, 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 bring it now, now, now. Whisper song.
Evil Little Goats, number 11.
Double digits.
For the second time in a row.
We made it. We finally made it.
I still think it would have been ironic if we only did 10 of these.
Well, I was going to make a comment during episode 10 that we might just axe it at 10.
But just call it good.
I think the first 9 would have been good to do it that way.
Yeah.
And they were.
Yeah, but I have a feeling this one is about to be one of the most memorable.
Epic.
In just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by our good friend Marco Collins, legendary radio DJ, Hall of Fame radio DJ.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
And center of the new movie, The Glamour and the Squalor. It's not even out yet. That's how new it is. They're still making it. Comes out next year. And just start Googling that if you're not aware of it yet, which I have a hunch anyone that is listening to us probably aware of it. I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, and you know, if you aren't aware of it, on the right-hand corner of the Gorilla Candy homepage, or possibly even on the page you're looking at this now, listening to, there's a little button, there's a little link that says Most Read Posts, and then it says Premiere the Glamour and the Squalor Trailer, a documentary about Marco Collins. You can click on that and read all about the movie and see the documentary. So
the trailer.
The trailer, not the full documentary.
Not the full because it doesn't exist yet.
Not quite done. So
there's that. So, yeah, Gorilla Candy is the website where this is hosted, and Travis is the man behind that. My name's Jeremy, and I do another podcast. It's called The Sibling Rivalry, and when you're done listening to this, maybe go check that out, because face it, what do you have to do?
Is it thesiblingrivalry.com?
Thesiblingrivalry.com.
Nice. Did you squat on that domain?
No, I just, you know, punched it in, and it worked.
Wow.
Yeah. I try siblingrivalry.com.
That's
different deal. Yeah. It's the.
When Gorilla Candy was ear candy, I couldn't get earcandy.com. Somebody was squatting on it, so I went earcandybeat.com.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I was like a beat writer.
Sure.
So yeah, I get that. You
got to work around it.
Yep.
It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. So Lightning Bolt is out.
It is out, and we've been listening obsessively.
It's a very good good entry into the Pearl Jam canon. I think that it beats out a couple albums. I like it more than Backspacer, mostly because of the variety.
Mm-hmm.
I like my songs to be more than 2.5 minutes most of the time, and I think that it's a nice representation of where the band's at now, which is really all you can ask for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't really ask them to go back and recreate 10.
And I'm in no way disappointed. I mean, I think for the most part we got the album that we expected.
Yeah, it was like I don't know about you, but I built it up in my brain. I was really excited for this record. I was like, oh my God, it's going to come out. Oh my God, it's great. And I was really looking forward to it, and I'm glad that it's here. But I wasn't disappointed with the final results. I wasn't like, it wasn't like, oh man, this sucks. I was just like, oh, okay. It's what I thought it was
solid,
going to be.
Yeah.
It's
Stone said,
it sounds like Pearl Jam. Yeah. Thanks, Stone.
Which is funny because it sounded like a snarky thing. But now when you hear it, you're like, yeah, he's right.
We need to get that, isolate that audio just for like a little bug that we can just play, you know, just like, little, like sounds like Pearl Jam. And then we'll just.
I might have it. And while I look, why don't you tell us about when you first heard the album in its entirety, the special event that you got invited to?
Yeah.
La-di-da.
Yeah, very, very fancy. I was very fortunate enough to be invited to attend the Pearl Jam Radio Sirius XM Town Hall, which was held on October 3rd at Studio X in Belltown, which is right next to Stone Gossard's studio, actually. Studio Litho, I think, is the name of the studio. I could be wrong on that. Bad Animals, I think that's the studio.
I think you're right.
Anyway, it was essentially a private Pearl Jam pizza party. it was because you walk into the room, me and 34 other people, there was 17 contest winners, and they're plus ones. So it was very, very intimate.
And they were from all over the country.
All over the country, from Vegas. Yeah. There were probably about half locals, but there were some from Vegas, from Georgia, Florida, California, Minnesota, I believe. Or no, Michigan. Anyway, there was pizza from the Crocodile. So we ate pizza, milled around and talked for a little while. And then Brendan O'Brien came out, and he's like, hey, we're all going to listen to the album now. And so he plays the record, and everybody's sitting in chairs listening to the album. I'm scribbling notes like crazy, like, okay, this is what this sounds like. And
was there, so everyone's sitting in chair, like, were they talking? Was everyone just attentively?
No, everybody was just sitting. People were kind of talking to their plus ones in between songs.
Like whispering, okay, yeah.
But
yeah.
It wasn't like
a casual hang where you're.
No, it was like, it was unlike any. I've been to lots of listening parties, and it was one of the most awkward things to do, but also really fun for me to do, is to listen to a band's album for the first time with the band in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Because you like you don't know what to say. Like, you can't tell them you don't like it,
right.
But they're going to ask you like constructive criticism, so you have to, you know, say something.
Right.
So like, I was thinking that Pearl Jam would be in the room while we were listening, and how weird would that be for Pearl Jam just to be sitting there and then like. Because there was no barrier between the band and the fans. There was no like gate. There was no.
You're all just in a room.
It was 34 fans sitting down in chairs, and then the album played. We listened to the album, and then everybody got shuffled around in the order of their questions, because Sirius chose the questions. In order to be invited to this town hall to win tickets, you had to submit a question to the band through Sirius, and Sirius would choose the questions. So all the questions were approved by the band, and surprisingly. Like 16 out of 17 of those questions were really good questions. This wasn't like just like, what's your favorite color?
Sure pick, yeah.
It wasn't all like, oh, what's your favorite rock star moment, or like cliche questions that you would ask a musician. These were like really good questions. And so people got separated from the plus ones, because the 70 people who had questions to ask were seated in the first 17 rows or 17 seats, and then the microphone just went down the line. And Brendan O'Brien moderated. So the band came in, and it was just surreal, man. I'm sitting like 5 feet away from Eddie, Mike, Matt, Jeff, Stone, and Boom. It was just like, wow.
Yeah.
That's Pearl Jam in fucking front of me.
Right.
Like, I mean, I've been to a lot of Pearl Jam shows, and I've interacted with members of the band, but like to see the whole band just sitting there, like it was crazy.
Waiting to hear what you have to ask.
Yeah, and it was really great, because like you could tell the band, I don't know if they wanted to be there. I assume that they had to. They obviously didn't want it. If they didn't want to do it, they wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But you could tell that they were happy with the experience.
Oh, good.
Like, they seemed authentically pleased, like very genuine. I at the end of the session, there was about an hour Q&A. And at the end of the hour, everybody posed for photos with the band in groups of 10. So five band members behind 10 people. And when it was my turn, you know, because I squeeze into a photo, I wasn't gonna not get a photo
sure.
with Pearl Jam. I mean, come on, Eddie Vedder was right behind me, and I'm like, this is fucking Eddie Vedder behind me. Like, what the what? I'm like, I'm not losing my shit.
Were you wearing your Pearl Jam hat?
No, I wasn't wearing any Pearl Jam gear at all. I wasn't losing my shit because I'm there right. in a professional capacity.
Right, right, right,
right. And they could tell that I was there in a professional capacity because they could see me taking notes the whole goddamn time.
Right.
So I turn around, I look at Eddie, and I say, hey. And he goes, hi. And I go, thanks for doing this. And I shake his hand, and he goes, thanks for showing up. And that was it. But he was very like, but it was a genuine thank you. It was like,
yeah.
It wasn't like, hey, thanks for showing up. It was like, thanks for coming to the party. It was more of like a, hey, thank you. I could tell, like, it meant a lot to the band that they were able to do that.
Right.
Like, they don't do that. That's one of the biggest fucking bands in the world. So big that I'm going to fucking say fuck a million fucking times. So fuck, fuck, fuck. I've been playing a lot of GTA 5. So I use the word fuck liberally now. But one of the biggest bands in the world just sitting there. And it's just some of the cool stuff that was learned, or that I learned while I was there. Mike McCready cried when he heard Sirens, the final version of Sirens, which I thought was awesome. Like, he's talking about, like, I don't normally cry, but I don't like crying in front of the guys, but I actually like shed a few tears when I heard Ed's vocals on it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaks to the power of that song. The Lightning Bolt stuff is going to sound great live, according to Stone. Ed wants to change the set lists a lot. I talked with a few people after the show, like Kelly Curtis, Pearl Jam's manager, Brendan O'Brien, The Rob, who does, I only know him as The Rob, because that's how he's introduced to me. But his job, check this out. Pearl Jam Radio is offered on 10 Club, through 10 Club, and then there's Sirius XM, two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So The Rob's job, who works for Pearl Jam, is to just program Pearl Jam Radio 24 hours a day. So he sets up 24-hour Pearl Jam playlist every day.
Jeez.
I'm like, we're going to have him on.
Yeah,
we're,
we have to.
It's just, that's just nuts. Yeah. His job is to make a fucking Pearl Jam set list all day. I want his job. So anyway, Ed's talked about how he wants to like mix up the set lists a little bit. And kind of, he's like, oh, we're ready to experiment. We hope the fans are ready to experiment too. I really, really hope that means that maybe they're going to work in some new covers this tour.
Mm.
I don't know who they would tour. Or, I mean, who they would cover? Maybe more fun stuff like you know, Sonic Reducer, Dead Boys has become a staple.
Yeah.
Maybe some more stuff like that. More stuff from the MC5 would be cool. And then you know, Ed talked a little bit about the gap between albums or between recording sessions. They did it in 2 years over mm-hmm. the span of 2 years. All this stuff's on Gorilla Candy. You can read it. It was just cool to see them interact and boom, Gasper. I was thrilled he was there because, I mean, come on. Like, he's Boom.
He's kind of the unsung hero of
the band. And you know, Boom didn't record the keyboard parts on the album. Brendan O'Brien did all
the
keys.
Oh, right.
So Boom has this laugh. It's like a mix between Jabba the Hutt and the Penguin from the old Batman. It's fantastic. But you think it would be kind of like booming and scary. Maybe that's where he gets his nickname Boom from.
Right.
But it's so like the smile on his face when he laughs, and just it's the
funny.
Warmth in his chuckle is just amazing. And Ed made a lot of jokes. Like,
yeah, I saw it. I think it was in your post you talked about the.
Yeah, he was joking around. That's how I could tell they were having fun. Ed was like, you know, they asked him about the difference between Backspacer and Lightning Bolt. And Ed chimed in at the very end. He's like, well, the artwork's going to be different.
Right.
They deadpanned it. And it was just like you had to like hear it.
Yeah.
You know, and Ed, it's just, it was an amazing experience. I feel very lucky to have been able to attend.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I will never forget. And I could easily just go away, like walk away as a Pearl Jam fan and just be like, okay, I had my moment. I don't need anything else from this band.
Bad news, friend. You got like 3 concerts coming up this fall. You can't walk away now.
Oh man.
Yeah. Well, you know who probably has some pretty awesome Pearl Jam stories?
Who's that?
Marco Collins.
Oh, our good friend Marco. Yes.
Our good friend Marco. So I think we're going to do, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, first thing I want to know are his stories. Because this is a guy who I assume on some level is friends with members of the band, if not all of the band.
Yeah.
He's been to their house. They've hung out.
He definitely has. I'm sure he has them all on speed dial.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
maybe not top 10 speed dial, but they're on speed dial.
Yes.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play a little bit of music. Pick a song.
Don't play Yellow Moon. I don't like that song.
Not Yellow Moon. We won't play Yellow Moon. We'll play this one.
I haven't played Sirens. I haven't played Sirens yet.
Sirens it is. We'll play Sirens, and or at least a portion of it. And when we come back, Marco Collins, legendary rock and roll Hall of Fame DJ, will share his stories about Pearl Jam. And we're going to talk about his movie, The Glamour and the Squalor. Go Google it right now and find out more about it and be ready for that to come out. It's going to be a great story. But Marco will join us right after this. Thanks for listening. Evil Little Goats Podcast.
Hear the sirens, hear the circus so profound. I hear the sirens, more and more in this here town. Let me catch my breath to breathe, let me reach across the bend. Just to know we're safe, I am a grateful man. This light has been a light, and I can see you clear. Have to take your hand and feel your breath, or feel.
So, Marco, you have had some extensive dealings with our good friend Eddie, or as I like to call him, Evie or Edved.
Yep.
Mr. Vedder.
He likes it when you call him that.
Evie?
It's Evie.
Evie, yeah.
What's up, Evie?
Yeah, Evie. Evie. Like in Wall-E.
Right.
Wall-E and Evie. Have you seen Wall-E? Tell me you've seen Wall-E.
Yeah, of course I've seen Wall-E.
Of course, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're all up on all the Pixar movies, right?
I have seen Wall-E just because it's so damn cute. I think I cried during that damn thing.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
How can you not, that poor little dude?
Anyway, you're the subject of a documentary, your life and career, called The Glamour and the Squalor, which is coming out next year.
For better or for worse.
Is that next year, 2014, is
yeah.
going to be
yeah.
around?
Yep.
A successful Kickstarter. Last podcast, we talked about the benefit show that went over swimmingly.
Yeah, it went over real well. It was awesome, man, last week. It was a lot of fun.
And we played at the beginning a really fun piece of audio from the movie where Eddie's saying, you know, you're listening to the first version you played, Eddie Vedder played my voice on the radio, Marco Collins.
Yeah.
Before you were with The End, you were a DJ in San Diego.
At a station called 91X, and Eddie was in a band called Bad Radio.
Yes, which was actually Bad Radio when he played it.
Yeah.
Not a very good band.
It was, well, I mean, he wrote Better Man.
Okay.
He wrote Better Man then. In fact, I still have the demo. Of the actual demo with Eddie's handwriting, Eddie's phone number and his address that he lived in La Mesa, which was near San Diego State University.
Is that the cassette in PJ20 that he holds up?
I don't know.
Maybe I don't know.
I don't know.
I know that you posted on, I think, your Facebook, or maybe you might have texted it to me or something. When you were starting to do doing the discovery research phase of the film. And you were in San Diego, I think, and you're like, I've got in my hands here Pearl Jam's demo tapes.
Yeah, well, Bad Radio's
demo tape. And I texted you back, or maybe and I was like, when do I get to hear this? Like,
yeah.
Like, when are you bringing this?
Oh, you haven't heard
in?
It.
Well, I've heard it, but I haven't. You have the actual tape.
I have the actual one. And you know what? Even if you search the internet, it's hard to find these songs the way they are on this cassette. So it's four songs. Two of them are live. And Better Man is live, done by Bad Radio, and it's really interesting. There's a couple other songs where he was kind of dipping into that. Some of the stuff is a little bit funky when, mm-hmm. like you know, when the Chili Peppers vibe was going on, very heavy bass riffs, you know, kind of a funky groove to it. Some of the stuff clearly evolved in a positive way. But Better Man's it's almost identical.
And Jack Irons wasn't in Bad Radio, but he was in the Chili Peppers. And
right.
And that's how Ed got his tape, or that's how Stone got his tape to Ed, or
yeah.
Jack Irons was involved somehow.
Right.
He was
right,
the middleman.
Right.
Eventually, he got his payback from Eddie by becoming a member of Pearl Jam.
Yeah, it's
kind of
crazy.
Did you know Jack too?
I didn't know Jack then. I mean, if I did, I don't remember, which, you know, there very well is that possibility.
Mm. He wasn't in the Chili Peppers forever. He eventually, was he the drummer in 11?
Yeah, I think he was in 11 as well.
How
yeah.
great was 11, by the way? Do you remember 11?
I do remember 11. I wasn't that big a fan of 11.
I saw them open for Soundgarden
at the Kitsap County Fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Where Tad Doyle got bottles of piss thrown at him.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think we probably shared this story.
Yeah.
The first time I met Tad Doyle, I was like, man, I was a teenager, I saw that show. I try not to do that to the older grunge guard because
right.
I think that makes them feel really old.
Right.
If a 35-year-old comes up and says, man, I saw you when I was a teenager. But anyway, I had to do it with Tad because he's fucking heavy. He's Tad.
Right.
And I was like, man, that was such a great show. And he goes, you know what I remember about that show? And I was like, oh, man, he's going to tell me a great story. It's going to be awesome. He goes, yeah, people were throwing 2 liters of bottles of piss at me at that show.
Gnarly.
So gross.
I was like, oh, man, lame. So
why are people pissing? Were there no bathrooms out there?
I think the lines for the honey buckets were probably like 4 miles long.
Why would you pee in a bottle then? Because you can just sort of like hide it?
The same thing happened to the Mars Volta at an End Fest with the Red Hot Chili Peppers in 2005, 6, 7.
Wow.
And Cedric walked off stage. Fuck it, I'm leaving. They cut off their set and they left.
Wow.
And that's why they don't play Seattle.
Really?
Have you? When was the last time the Mars Volta played in Seattle?
When was the last time Mars Volta played?
Well, they are no longer a band. Right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
That might be a bigger reason why they don't play Seattle anymore.
And I think they almost got banned from Sasquatch because they were taking Renee McMahon's. Do you know Renee McMahon?
No.
She's a photographer for The Weekly. They were like taking her photo gear while she was in the pit trying to take her camera. And then like Cedric was throwing cymbals into the crowd. He was throwing a speaker and a cymbal into the crowd.
Holy shit.
That shit could hurt somebody.
Yeah.
But anyway.
This is quite a rabbit hole we're going down.
Yeah. back to your relationship with the band or your experiences with the band.
Right.
You later, after working in San Diego, came up to Seattle.
Yep.
Where all the magic started to happen. And from there, you actually played Pearl Jam. You played Eddie's voice again, it was in Pearl Jam. What kind of connections did you make between Bad Radio and Pearl Jam as you were, like, did you ever think, oh, I figured this might happen? Or could you have seen Ed?
Well, no, I mean, it wasn't. Here's the thing, is that when Pearl Jam formed and got together, there was a buzz that this was going on. Mark Pickerel just pointed out to me, I interviewed him, I do these podcasts for Bumbershoot, and Pickerel has been, you know, he was the drummer of the Screaming Trees, he's played with Nirvana, he's been around, right? He reminded me that we saw Pearl Jam's first show together in New York City in 1989. And I was like, what? And he's like, dude, don't you remember? It was the first time we met. You knew you were coming to Seattle, but you hadn't like told the world yet. We were drinking beers and then we went to Pearl Jam's debut show.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't remember. I just don't remember.
Mark Pickerel has the best hair in Seattle.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. Oh my God. Okay, another rabbit hole here.
Sure.
That man told me stories. I'm getting back. I'm moving on to Nirvana right now, of him and Kurt, because they recorded together. Mm-hmm. So we kind of played one of the songs that they did together.
It was a Leadbelly cover.
Yeah,
right?
But it's such a great little song. And he was just telling me stories about Kurt that were pretty damn amazing. It was Kurt was like so not... He was still like bright-eyed and, you know, into it and passionate about music that he loved. And, you know, he was just sort of had that fire to him. And then he was telling me killer stories about Kurt being on a commercial airline, not in first class, after Nevermind, that he ended up sitting between Kurt and Chris Novoselic. And this was Nirvana was flying down to rehearse for In Utero tour. And they were sitting in the very back of the plane next to the bathroom, like in D, E, and F.
Right.
The three seats. And Pickerel got sat between Novoselic and Kurt Cobain. And apparently, he didn't mention this in the interview, but he had a Details magazine in his bag. And it was a Nirvana story that he had brought because he wanted to read it. And so he pulled it out of the bag and Kurt said, hey, let me read that. I haven't read it yet. So he hands it over to Kurt, and apparently Grohl said something in that article, and we didn't talk about this in the podcast, but I'm going to lay it out right here, that Kurt asked him to join Nirvana right then, that they were going to fire Grohl.
Wow.
No way.
In fact, they talked several times over the next month about it happening. Pickerel almost went and completely replaced Grohl.
Well, and that's always been a story or a rumor that there was kind of dissension amongst the band and that.
At least
that
that's what Pickerel said. That's what Mark said.
That's where the Foo Fighters kind of came into play, where Dave just wanted to do his own thing.
Yeah.
So at this point in your career, do you still, obviously you still hear stories that amaze you from back in the day?
Yeah, like that story. I mean, that was a wild one.
Do you have any memorable Pearl Jam experiences from your radio time? Like at the end?
It's funny, the first time Eddie walked into the studio, the first time I met Eddie face to face was at the end. It wasn't in San Diego. So you know how like you listen to your favorite DJ, you get sort of this vision of what that person should look like. So Eddie walks in, having listened to me for years, and walked in and went, whoa, I thought, I had no idea what you were going to look like. He thought that I was going to be blonde have long hair, because when I was in San Diego, I guess I had a little bit of a surfer drawl.
Sure.
You know, sort of a lazy surf drawl to my voice. I don't know how that happened, I guess, living in San Diego for years.
You just pick it up, yeah.
But, yeah, so that was kind of a weird thing, having Eddie Vedder walk through and go, oh, I thought you would look totally different.
You know, Eddie Vedder, the one thing that, like, when I briefly had my 1 second or 3 second brush with Eddie Vedder a couple weeks ago where I met him, shook his hand, he's shorter than I thought he was going to be. That's like, I knew he was short, and I've seen him walk by me, but like standing right next to him, it's like, man, he's like 5'8". He's shorter than Russell Wilson.
When I met him, it was similar. It was a radio thing. I booked him for an interview, and he came in, and I remember sitting at my desk, and you know, we had this intercom system that came into the newsroom, and you just, you know, you hear the buzzer, and our guy answers it, and you just, like, this voice of God.
Eddie Vedder, I'm here to be on the radio.
Yeah. And you're just like, and like your world just kind of stops for a minute, because I mean, this is a guy I've wanted to be since I was 12,
right?
And I have to go get him from the door,
right?
You know,
it's funny.
And so you go get him, and I'm just like towering. You expect him to just be this like. This icon, and I'm like looking down because I'm like 2 feet taller than the guy.
I mean, I've always had respect for the dude. I mean, he can sing. He remembers what I said about his first demo. Like, he remembers verbatim what I said on the radio.
Wow.
How scary is that, by the way, that people remember the stuff you say about them? I mean, as far as like in the industry.
Thank God. Like, I've always kept sort of a, you know, a pretty reputable.
When I met,
I haven't dissed many bands on the air. Thank God.
When I met Audra Boo for the first time, it was a couple days after. Audra Boo's in a group called Flaming Royalty, and Marco, you were there when I met her, and the label head Devon introduced me. I was trying to try to be inconspicuous. I don't want to be known, especially if it's a band I just wrote about. And she comes up to me because I wrote like their debut EP needed more. Like I had something. So she like comes up to me and goes, "Oh, I know you. You said we need more." And I was like, "Oh shit." And
yeah.
Audra's great. You know, we hugged it out. We're friendly and everything. But it was just, do you get that with radio where people remember what you say and like you?
Oh yeah.
You.
Especially now we're making a movie. People remember things that I don't, and specific things, like really specific things. You know, for Pickerel to say, "Don't you remember we met in New York City in 1989? We went to see Pearl Jam's debut show." Hell no, I don't remember that. I remember seeing Jane's Addiction. I remember seeing Nine Inch Nails, but I don't remember seeing Pearl Jam. I just don't remember. I do remember this. This is good stuff. I don't know if I've ever told you this. So years ago, Eddie had a birthday party over in West Seattle at his house, and he invited me. And I went. And I got to his house, and, you know, there's whatever, the password at the gate, and, you know, the gate opens, whatever, we come in. Eddie gives me a tour of the house, and this was one of those moments I was just dying, because I'm like, this is the most badass house in the world. Eddie loves that turn-of-the-century, cool stuff that's like Star Trek-looking stuff, like super modern, like, but... turn-of-the-century modern, like cheesy, fun modern. So we walk in, and the first thing that, I was told about it as I walked in. There's a closet sort of there as you go through the front door, and the closet is not actually a closet anymore. It is a fire pole that goes down to the practice room. So you open the closet and you get in and you slide down into all these cushions, and that's where the band practices. So or whoever practices,
right.
not Pearl Jam, but Eddie and his friends or whatever.
Right.
And then it was just very cool, man. He had a lot of very cool stuff in his house, just very stylized. You know, everything about the house was very, very cool. There was one room that was just a complete awesome stoner room. I mean, it didn't seem like there were any corners in this room. Like, he had completely taken all the corners out, so everything was round. And he had put in these colored glass, chunks of colored glass with lights behind them. So everything glowed, but throbbed. So it was like different colored lights.
That's
it was
awesome.
Just the perfect room to get baked and sit in. And it was like, you know, it was just amazing. I remember just looking at these lights going, this is so rad. Like, this guy, he can do whatever he wants, and he is.
Yeah.
And it's fucking cool.
Do you know? I mean, do you know? Is that does he write in there, or is it just?
I don't know if he wrote in there. If like that's a just a chill out room at the time, he was really getting into movie production stuff. So he had a whole room so he could edit film that he had just put in, and it was a. Oh wait. There's another one. So at the end of the night, there ended up being a jam session, and I won't get into all the players that were at that jam session because I feel like this is stuff I've talked about before. But the greatest part is getting out of the basement. You go up a stairwell, but in the stairwell, he's taken the old Star Wars lightsabers, the ones that came out at the time that go, woo, and some of them glow red, some of them glow blue, and he's like crossed them all throughout the hall. So as you walk up, you hum these sounds, like,
oh
as
God.
You're walking up. It's just perfect stoner shit, dude. It is the best. Like, so you walk up, and it's like,
that is
like
so
when they're all
funny.
Turned on, just your presence around them.
Yeah.
And it was just like one of the coolest things. I'm like, this is what, when you're a kid and you think, I have all the money in the world, I'm going to do what the fuck I want, this is what I would do. And it's like, you know, it was just a really cool place. You're like, so cool. You know, it wasn't so much like, it wasn't flashy. Mm-hmm. It was just Eddie being Eddie, mm-hmm. and doing what he wanted to do with his place because he could, and it was great, man. It was really it was kind of a cool evening for me to be there.
So if I can, let's shift a little bit to the movie and the band is working with you. I don't know how much you can say about what they're doing, but it sounds like they're doing a lot.
Well, Mike McCready is scoring the film, which is interesting. I ran into him at Pearl Jam or at Cheap Trick. And I hadn't seen him since he had started scoring the film.
He told you he cried.
Yeah. Apparently there was more than one scene that made him cry. But there was a couple of intense scenes in the movie. But he's actually being handed the scenes, you know, and sitting in with his guitar and writing while he's watching the scenes. Which I never knew how a film was scored. I didn't know if you take a chunk of music and you fit it into the film, if the artistry falls on the director or the artist scoring. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And in this case, Mike is seeing the actual film and writing around it. And I guess the Young Evil stepped in on a track with him. Barrett Jones is playing on it as well. I've heard some stuff. The most awesome thing is my director asked McCready to write some electronic stuff. There is electronic sounds on the record that I've heard. On the soundtrack that I've heard. And I'm like, freaking McCready did this? Like, it's very, you wouldn't think it was Pearl Jam in a million years.
Right.
Then there's tracks where, you know, it really becomes a groove and you feel like you're in the jam session of, you know, there's some really driving stuff on the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
But running into McCready at a Cheap Trick, he kept smiling at me. And I'm like, dude, why are you smiling? And he's like, I've gotten to know you better than I ever thought I would. And I'm like, I imagine you have, my friend.
You haven't seen the final product.
No, I've seen two damn scenes that we showed at the benefit the other night. I'm a little nervous about it because if it made him cry, what's it going to, like, I'm just wondering how intense it's going to be.
I think I told you this before, but Mike cried when he heard the final version of Sirens.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Mike is also in a band that plays the songs Better Man and Daughter and Last Kiss.
Are you saying he's a sensitive soul?
They're all kind of pansy songs.
Oh, dude, ouch.
So I'm guessing he cries easily, Marco.
Okay.
And
well,
this is why Mike McCready will never be on our podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly not now.
Of course he will.
Yeah, not anymore.
He's, you know what? He's an amazing. Okay, so something, I'm just going to throw this out there. The last time I saw Pearl Jam, Key Arena, 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Four.
How long? Okay. Mm-hmm. 4 years ago, I went to that show. I've seen Pearl Jam, you know, a million times. I'm sure not as many as you, though.
No, I think you've probably seen them.
I've seen him a bunch, and I don't remember. And I came up to him afterwards, and I was like, not after that show, but a couple days later. And I was like, I don't remember you standing out as such a star in that band. It's him and Eddie. Like, they are the friggin' band live. Like, Jeff does his thing, Stone does his thing, Matt does his thing, but holy shit, dude. McCready on that stage is a fucking rock star. That shit comes through his body. Like, whether or not you're calling him a sensitive man, pansy, or whatever, he channels whatever it is, and it's pure. Fucking McCready, it's pure.
We talked about this one or two shows ago, that there is just something otherworldly.
He channels it, man. Yeah. And seeing him on stage, I don't remember him. It's almost like he was a rocket on that friggin' stage.
Well, he's jumping and kicking, and he's
hitting every note, and his energy, and like seeing him with Cheap Trick. You saw my pictures, didn't I? And the video, like I was front row for that damn Cheap. They're my favorite band of all time, right? So I'm front row, and I had no idea. I saw him at the show, figured he was just hanging out like I was,
right?
And then he's on stage, so I shot the whole song that all three songs that he played on. Actually, I shot them all. I got some really good photos.
He did Surrender, right?
He played
Surrender, and then he did like a Beatles song, right?
They did, no, Clock Strikes 10. Okay. No, he didn't play on any of the Beatles tracks.
Okay.
I don't think. I know he did three for sure. I don't know.
Well, Mike was there. And anytime you see Mike in a place where there's band playing, there's a good chance he's going to
be on stage. The funny thing is, because I'm a little paranoid about this movie.
Of course.
You know, I just said to him, I was like, dude, I'm friggin' nervous. And he just goes, stop. Trust me. I'm your friend. Trust me. This is not going to be a bad thing. You've got to let this go. You've got to roll with this. This is a beautiful story. And I'm like,
Well, the thing freaks me out even more. The thing is that it's going to be a good story. I mean, it'll be a good story. But for people like me, and I think Travis and a lot of people that grew up listening to you and have had a connection with you, it is going to introduce us to a whole side of you that we didn't know existed.
Right.
I mean, there's stuff that we've just talked about on my other podcast that a lot of people don't even know that you've gone through and all that. So I think this is going to be a big eye-opener for a lot of people that are, you know, long-time fans. And so, I mean, I think we have that connection. And
we definitely unearth a lot of stuff that happened in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Some stuff people know about and some stuff people don't know about. And there's a good chunk of both. The scenes that we showed the other night, where I hadn't seen either of these scenes. How awkward is it to be in a party with 400 friggin' people and like eight bands, never having seen these scenes, and I'm in the audience and I'm like, fuck, what if they suck? What if it's totally embarrassing? What do I do then? Do I have a way I can run? Like, is there a path I can run out of here right now?
Is there a closet with a pole
I can
slide
down? And you know what?
Down.
I was pleasantly surprised. It definitely... I didn't know what to expect out of this. I've seen nothing but the trailer. Mm-hmm. Everybody's seen, I mean, well, we've seen the trailer. Right. It's online. You can see the trailer. It's just that I hadn't seen these scenes. One of the scenes was about when I got a hold of In Utero a month early and played it on the air.
I remember that.
And I had no idea that they found an interview with Kurt where he talks about me playing it on the air. And then it goes back and forth with me and Kurt describing what happened. And I was like, holy shit, Kurt Cobain's going to be in my fucking movie. That's amazing.
Talking about shit that happened.
And he was pissed. He was pissed, dude. I mean, it was funny. The scene, he's like, well, they were pretty clever because they didn't play the record until after the business day was over on a Friday. So nobody could get a hold of them all weekend. So they got to play the fucking record all weekend. And then Kurt kind of looks at the camera and he's like, it's pretty smart. And then he's like, we couldn't get it off the air. Like, we tried the lawyers, so I had to hire a hitman. And that part, watching Kurt react to that, because I remember Courtney calling me up saying, Kurt's pissed at you. And I could hear him in the background going, tell him I'm not pissed. These aren't the final mixes. Because apparently I got mixes before there was cello on All Apologies and things like that. But, you know, there's some cool stuff. The other scene was an animated scene of the Super Suckers on stage with Mudhoney, outing me in front of 8,000 people without knowing they were outing me. So it's the whole story about that.
Shit.
Oh, it's a pretty intense little thing. But, you know, the wildest part was not seeing that stuff, because I knew that was coming. The wildest part is hearing the crowd react to it, mm-hmm. like not knowing if they're going to get the punchline, and they all got the punchline. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, damn, all right. The editing is good if they're hitting it, hitting it, and the whole crowd is cracking up at where they're supposed to. That's the weird part, watching a crowd react to it. I guess it's similar to what a band must go through when they're throwing their, you know, when they're on stage doing their thing.
It's hard, though, because you're not really directing the product. I mean, you're a part of it, and it's about you.
Right.
But you're not the one putting the final thing. And that's
No.
Do you have veto power? Or were there just certain things that were off limits?
Okay, I'm not stupid enough to have jumped into this endeavor. My biggest fear when I agreed to this movie was that it would end up being similar to the Rodney on the Rock movie, which was about Rodney Bingenheimer from LA DJ, Los Angeles DJ, infamous guy. I mean, he broke all the new wave, like the Pistols, like all that shit in the 80s. Friends with Bowie. He had Bowie, Mick Jagger on his show. Like, he was instrumental. He was like this amazing character. But man, they portray him to be the saddest, most lonely, pathetic man in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad. And I thought, I'm not going to have a documentary come out about me that's like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't have veto power, but I'm involved with this film, and I brought in people. I brought in my best friend to be a producer on the film. So basically, there's four partners on this film, and I am a partner on the film. I'm not a producer on the film, but I'm a partner, which is why I fundraise, why I'm out there fundraising. I'm definitely... You know, and to some people, that's a little weird. I don't have veto power, but I made sure that it was an equal team.
So someone's looking out for your interest and
right,
not letting
right. Yeah. So that we all have a say in what goes on in this film. And by no means do I win anything. My director and I have sometimes different ideas about where things should go in the film. And right now, because we're kind of nearing the end of our shooting, we're almost done shooting. I'll just say this. I've had no friggin' clue what this was going to be like. And after seeing those two scenes, now I kind of have a little bit of an idea of the personality of this film. Mm-hmm. After seeing myself animated walking into Rock Candy, I'm like, wow, that's kind of rad. That's kind of rad. It's like we're watching a cartoon now. Like, that part is kind of, it felt super like indie, and it just felt fun. Mm-hmm. That part felt cool and not, I didn't feel quite as exposed. There's other shit, though, that I just let it all go. I mean, there were scenes that they got me to talk about some shit that I couldn't stop crying during a shoot. I'm like, can you stop? Can you stop the shoot? Like, just shit where they hit the emotional, you know, when you're talking about your mom, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's like everybody's like moment of intensity. And so there's some stuff in there. There's some really interesting things in there, too. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting story. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about right now. It's super weird when I start talking about it because I don't know how it's going to turn out.
Right.
Seeing those two scenes made me kind of go, all right.
Whose decision was it for you, or how intentional, I guess, is it for you to not see what's being produced?
Oh, very intentional
on
all
them?
Parts.
Okay.
Well, I'm way too critical, dude. I look at that and I think, why did you not lose 20 pounds for this fucking movie shoot? You plumped up the year that you fucking are filming a movie to document your life. Now you're fatty. So, I mean, that part, like, that part freaks me out. As I'm watching it, I'm like, why do I have to have a triple chin? Why do I have to have a triple chin in that picture? But the bottom line is, and I have to remember this, this is a bigger story than just mine. Mm-hmm. This is a story about Seattle music. This is a story about gay rights. This is a story about addiction. There's a lot of different threads going on throughout this thing that I've got to remember it's not all about me. So there were some weird moments at the benefit where some of the bands were like, give all your money to Marco, you know, give your life savings to Marco because it was a benefit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yo, don't give it to me. Do not give me your money. Trust me, the money is not going in my pocket. Give it to my director and my producer.
Yeah. Well,
back on the Pearl Jam tip.
Well, speaking as someone who, and Jeremy probably said the same thing, someone who I've gotten to know you over the past few years and also grew up listening to you, I don't think you're going to be portrayed as sad and lonely. I think that you'll be portrayed as someone who's had a very interesting journey.
Yeah.
And who's very much loved. Very much
well, thank you.
A positive member of the local music community. And I hope, I haven't seen the film, maybe I'll bug your director, Mark, to, you know,
give a little love
to me.
Yeah.
Drop me into a screening room so I can give the film some advanced praise, maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, I hope that it's a story of redemption. And I know how you've come out on the other end now.
Yeah.
So, and I know that there's been some turbulence along the way.
And the most important thing is when they approached me to do this movie, my whole thing was, how does the story end? Like, if I had years of sobriety under my belt, it would be one thing. Dude, I struggle with sobriety every day. Some days I'm sober, some days I'm not. It's not like I've won the battle. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we all agreed that, I mean, for me, it gets easier and easier and better, you know, like you grow up. You grow up and you realize that your body can't take that shit anymore. That's the first thing that happens is that, yeah, I just can't put my body through that shit anymore. But that doesn't mean I've won the battle by any means. And I guess we all really decided that it was more important. The story might affect more people. Not everybody wins the battle of alcoholism and drug addiction. Mm-hmm. People struggle with it their whole life, and we decided that it wasn't necessarily a story of redemption. It was a story of daily struggle, you know?
Reality.
And so by no means am I portraying myself as 100% sober, you know? It's something that I struggle with still, and you know, like I said, it gets better, but it's not like, you know, it's not like I just declared 5 years of sobriety or I have a year of sobriety under my belt, because I don't. So, you know, there's that. There's that. Now, this poor Pearl Jam podcast has totally been derailed.
I don't think so.
I don't think so at all.
All no. Right.
No, it's fascinating.
And as also, I mean, the poll. Sliding on that pole. Did you get to slide down the pole in Eddie Vedder's place?
Oh, fuck yeah. We all slid down the pole. That's the only way to get down there. You can't walk down the stairs. The stairs are the exit route. It was amazing. That was an amazing, amazing time, dude.
So I want to go back to that. I know you got to get
going.
Yeah,
I'm supposed to have dinner in a minute.
One real quick question, and I think we can let you go. Just imagining you getting an invitation to Eddie's birthday party, like, I just imagine, you know, in my head, Marco Collins is best friends with all these people that I've listened to all of my life. Like, are you friends with all of these people?
I mean, I haven't talked to Eddie in years. Last time I talked to Eddie was at a show in San Diego, and he waved to me from backstage up on a level. I haven't talked to him. Mm-hmm. He's agreed to be in the film, and we haven't shot that scene yet. So I'm crossing my fingers that's going to happen fairly soon. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I'm friends. I mean, McCready and I would say we're friends.
Okay.
But no, I mean, you know, back in the day, Eddie and I knew each other way better. In fact, the other day I found my Rolodex.
I had a Rolodex. I wrote about you having a Rolodex.
Yes. Back in the day, I had a Rolodex and I found it and I forgot that I had all these people's home numbers. They're, you know, they didn't have cell phones back then. But I had all these people's, like, oh, there's Nova Salad. Like, just all these folks that I had no idea that I actually had relationships with all these people. Like, my memory is shot, Travis. You know, people remember things, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, fuck, that's right. Mm-hmm. You know, so things will pop back up. But, No, I remember when I started my record label. I started a little indie label, and I got home one day like you did, and Eddie had left me a message just saying, hey, I just want to say congrats on the record label. I think that's fucking amazing that you're starting a label, and good for you, and I hope to see you around. Bam. Mm-hmm. Just like really cool shit like that. But that's, you know, it was at a time that the scene was very small. And even though those bands had gotten huge, it was still small here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know, what you said, you know, there were like a million stars here, but it was still very much a small town vibe.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? I'm really interested in hearing what Eddie might remember that I don't about certain things. So, you know, here's the thing. You ask people to be in your movie and to talk about things. More often than not, they're going to remember shit that you don't and that maybe isn't always something you want in the film necessarily. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like today I was hanging out with John Roderick and he reminded me that we used to live across the hall from each other, which I didn't remember. And then we lived in these lofts up on Capitol Hill, and he reminded me of one night he knocked on my door, and I opened the door, and well, you'll have to listen to the podcast for the rest of
the There's
said,
a plug.
He said that, yeah, and I just did not remember that. He's like, dude, we lived across the hall from each other. We saw each other all the fucking time. And he's like, all I know is that you constantly had a party going on, and I think you had like a dungeon in there. I'm like, I did not have a fucking dungeon in my loft. I had turntables. It was dirty a lot, but and I had people over all the time, but I didn't have a dungeon. He is thinking there was a dungeon in the building, though, that these people rented out this dungeon to pay their rent. So they would have S&M parties once a month to pay their rent. And it was like, so I remember one time Ty from Green Apple Quickstep came over, the singer, and we and I decided I wanted to see the dungeon. So me and Ty like got drunk and we went over and just knocked on these people's doors. And they opened the door and showed us the place. And it was awesome because I actually strapped him into this machine. We were drunk. We were having fun. I'd never seen all this stuff, like spinning wheels that you put people in, cages, all this shit. So I pulled him up in this contraption, and then I wouldn't let him down. He just swung from the ceiling for a while. And you know what? That shit was fun. That shit was fun, but it wasn't me with the dungeon that he was talking about.
There just happened to be a dungeon.
Well, he said that I opened the door and... and that it looked like I had been up for about 6 days and that I was just raging, like partying and I, you know, whatever. It's surprising that I opened the door.
Okay.
Because if in most situations I wouldn't open the door. Fuck, why would I open the door? Like, I don't want
especially when you've got a goddamn sex dungeon in your apartment.
Yeah. Dude, reality is out that door. Right. I don't want reality. That's why I'm in my apartment with the door closed and the curtains drawn and the music up and the lights on and the butterflies.
And the people.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
God, this is weird.
It's
this
late.
Got weird.
And I know you've got plans, so we're gonna cut you loose. But thank you so much for doing. It's always an honor and a thrill to be able to sit across the table.
Are you guys continuing on without me? Is this where I leave and you talk about me?
I think we'll probably.
We have to decide whether we're doing a second show or not.
I think
this
will be edited right
yes.
now.
Yes.
And what I was gonna suggest was that we walk you out and then we.
Yeah,
come back and
do
your thing.
And play a song and fade out the episode. Yeah. And
can we play a song right now as we walk out?
Please.
Yeah.
What would you like to play?
It doesn't have to be Pearl Jam.
Sleeping by Myself.
Oh,
let's hear that one. I want to hear that one.
All right. Well, that's what we'll play. Marco, thanks so much. We should mention the movie, The Glamour and the Squalor.
Yep. 2014 sometime.
And you can Google that and all that. And then the podcast.
Bumbershoot.org. It's called Under the Umbrella.
And there we go. Thanks so much, Marco.
Yep.
Always a pleasure.
Down below, I always got it to myself. And I believe in nothing. Not today as I pull myself out of your sight. I'll be sleeping by myself tonight. I could never go with.
the warnings. The hurt don't show, but who knows? Time will tell. I believe in nothing but the pain, and I can see this turning out right. Oh, I'll be sleeping by myself tonight. Forever be sad and lonely. Forever never be the same. I close my eyes and wait for a sign. Am I just waiting? Sometimes the two are just the same. I'm beginning to see what's left of me is gonna have to